This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, welcome to it. Welcome to the end of the week program here. Thanks so much for being aboard once again. Don't look now, but we have races. Don't look now, but Buffalo over the Islanders 4-0. We got a race there. Devils over the Stars 6-2. Are they still in it? Washington Capitals over the Seattle Kraken 2-1. Again, how many times are we going to say Kraken RIP? We'll say it again. Caps over Kraken 2-1 there. So Caps, despite what you may think about the Washington Capitals and what they did in and around debt trade deadline and how their general manager about 5 minutes ago threw in the towel very publicly, a couple Saturdays ago anyhow, they're still in this thing. Except for you, Detroit, you can't stop losing. 4-1 yesterday against the Arizona Coyotes. Second time you have lost to the Coyotes recently. 4-1 is the final. Second loss in 2 weeks to the Arizona Coyotes. Seventh loss in a row for the Detroit Red Wings. But through all of this too, I still think maybe the most charming moment and the moment that I'll take away from all of last night's action, it was Evgeny Kuznetsov for the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, going into last night's game, or games rather, and there were 12 of them, we all thought that has the potential to be the game of the night. And it was, if you're a Carolina Hurricanes fan. Carolina pretty much having their way with the Florida Panthers yesterday. First shutout of the season for Frederik Andersen. 4-0 is the final score there. 21 save performance from Freddie Andersen. Evgeny Kuznetsov with his first goal as a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. And yes, we saw the bird yesterday from Kuznetsov. And it was great. And the Carolina Hurricanes did that as part of their storm surge. And he talked about afterwards, about, you know, feeling like he wanted to cry a little bit afterwards. And we all know what Evgeny Kuznetsov has been through, not just this season, but previous seasons as well. And was in a definite need for a change of scenery. And it looks very much like the Hurricanes, their fans, their team, everyone has embraced him. And he has found a home in Carolina. Quickly, Jake Guentzel, by the way, with his first point as a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. And also, just as people like me were starting to write off the Tampa Bay Lightning, they come back with that last night. 6-3 over the New York Rangers. 6 points for Brayden Point. 5 for Kucherov, and all of a sudden we're saying, you know what? You wonder if this is the moment where the good ship Tampa Bay Lightning does a course correction, because they do it every year, right? Like, there was a couple of times in every season recently where the Tampa Bay Lightning kind of give you a reason to say age catches up to everyone. They've played a lot of hockey. This is the downturn now for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then they pull out a game like that, that they pretty much own against a really good opponent in the New York Rangers. And yes, I know I've talked about it all week long. The Rangers are playing 5 games in 7 nights. What league is this again? And fatigue's certainly an issue. We suspect that wasn't the Shesterkin we've been used to of recent note. Thank you very much. But nonetheless, nice win last night for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Toronto with the Philadelphia Flyers. In the last game of John Tortorella's suspension, Austin Matthews finds the back of the net, his 55th goal of the season. And one of the hot-button notes on this one, and listen, these two teams will face off against each other at the Wells Fargo on Tuesday, so we'll see what happens then. Sheldon Keefe putting out top power play when it was up, when they were up 6-1 in the third period. Rocky Thompson, assistant coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, none too pleased at Sheldon Keefe, who then threw out Ryan Reeves on the power play, and Philly scored shorthanded. Because, of course, Philly scored shorthanded. But one of the big stories, Buffalo Sabres over the Islanders, 4-0. You know, we talked yesterday about, you know, what the decision would be if the Buffalo Sabres found themselves tied with a couple of minutes left in that game, one where they want to deny the Islanders any points and they want to pick up the regulation win, what would they do? Well, that was a moot point. Didn't matter. Buffalo Sabres started in a dominant position and they stayed there 13-5. Shots on goal in the first period for the Buffalo Sabres yesterday. Zach Benson, who had a really bad start to this game, but by the end, course corrected. 2 goals in this one, including the empty netter. But the story of the game, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen with his 5th shutout of the season. He's been fantastic for the Buffalo Sabres, full stop. And now, all of a sudden, the Buffalo Sabres are very much in the playoff picture. A scant 3 points away from a wild card spot. And we wonder, can the Buffalo Sabres do this? Is this possible for a team like the Buffalo Sabres? Is it possible for a team like the Washington Capitals? Is it possible for the Detroit Red Wings to turn things around? Have I mentioned how they've lost 7 games in a row? And outside of moving Klim Kostin to the San Jose Sharks at deadline, did nothing at trade deadline. Like, they're still in it right now, but they are headed the wrong direction right now. All of these things up for grabs with my first guest on the program today. You've heard him here before. You've heard him. You've seen him either on the ice or behind the microphone. He is the great Mike Rupp, and he joins me now. Rupper, how are you today?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you doing, bud?
I'm good. A lot of hockey to digest from last night. And all of a sudden, we wake up this morning and have a look at the standings, and we say to ourselves, do we actually have races here? I mean, Detroit's falling out of this thing. They've lost 7 in a row. Tough one for the Islanders last night. Good on the Buffalo Sabres. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen continues to be a wonderful story. The Caps win. They knock off the Seattle Kraken. New Jersey handles the Dallas Stars, and I think there's some legit concerns about Jake Oettinger and his performance so far this season. More on that in a couple of moments. But is the East for that wild card kind of open to you right now, Rupper, or am I just maybe seeing a mirage?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's wide open, and it's kind of driving me nuts that it is. It's like nobody wants to grab a hold of that. And, you know, there's been teams in positions, man, for a long time. I personally thought that Pittsburgh was in a position to do something to grab this. They had the games in hand. They've been fumbling. New Jersey clearly has been fumbling. You just mentioned Detroit. The Islanders were that one team that was grabbing a hold of it, right? And then all of a sudden, I mean, they have a no-show. Like, these aren't even – and that's the thing I think that drives me nuts. It's like, you're going to lose some games, but to have games like that, and we've seen some of these teams have them, it's like, guys, the playoffs are they're in the grasp of a lot of teams in the East. And I just think it's the way it's been going with teams dropping games. It's keeping that window open for a lot of teams. And yeah, there is a race, and it's with a bunch of teams right now. You win 3 games, 4 games in a row, you're sitting pretty. But right now it seems like it's really hard for teams to do that.
Let me circle back. There's a lot there that I want to pull out. Let me circle back to the Islanders, because it wasn't just the Buffalo Sabres game. I mean, it was also the Los Angeles Kings game. And we talk about, oh, big save Dave had to make 21 or 22, you know, and someone in Los Angeles texted me right away when I said that here on the radio. And they said, big Dave didn't have to make any saves in that one. That was the proverbial no-show. And that's 2 no-shows in a row now for the Islanders. Yeah. They've been blanked in back-to-back games, losing to LA, losing to the Buffalo Sabres, and now all of a sudden we're wondering. But let me get on the Sabres page here. They are an incredibly frustrating team, loaded with potential. You wonder when they're going to take the next step. Move Eric Johnson, move Kyle Okposo, and through all of it, you know, one of the things that I'm always quick to point out is how great Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has been. And here's why I love stories like this. This administration did not draft Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. That is a Jason Botterill draft, and that was Jason Botterill's goaltender. He was going to be the guy, and I get it. Like, I understand it. And then the new regime comes in, and it's all about Devon Levi. And whether it was last season when Luukkonen got called up and was the battery with Craig Anderson, Craig Anderson sort of picked a lot of the games that he was going to play. He's a veteran. He's not going to play 50 or 60 games. And Luukkonen got, as we looked at the schedule, the real tough assignments. Like, Luukkonen was in there against killers, and he did great. And then Levi entered the equation. And not that they were handing him the starter's position, but they gave him a lot of games down the stretch and said, essentially, we're not going to block you here. And then the beginning of this season, Luukkonen can't even get in a game. It's Devon Levi and it's Eric Comrie, and Luukkonen can't get anything. Finally starts to get some games, and now you're starting to see just how good Luukkonen is. To me, the story of the Buffalo Sabres right now is their goaltender. I want to get to Bo Byram here in a second too, but what's the story of the Sabres for you, Rupper?
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point you brought up, and I'm not necessarily speaking on the Buffalo Sabres in this regard, but you've seen it. I've seen it firsthand playing. Depends whose idea you are as far as who's in charge of who's going to get more looks. And, you know, a lot of times, again, not specifically speaking on the Sabres here, a lot of times I find that in leadership positions, it's about making sure our guys, the guys that we found, the guys that we drafted, the guys that our regime did, kind of get those opportunities, right? And I know, I think it's kind of gotten to the point here where UPL, I mean, he's seen some stuff in his short career so far. And my big question for goaltenders is, I wonder if, because we've seen goalies come in on teams that don't play good team defense, and it ruins them. Like, it'll ruin a career or not even give you that opportunity to continue in the NHL. But then we've also seen some that you get a lot of looks you shouldn't get, and you get a lot of work. And we see goalies kind of come out on the other side, and they're better for it. And I wonder if that's the situation with UPL. But, you know, the one thing I will say with this management group, I know that even last year in the summer, there's a lot of conversations like they need a goaltender, they need a veteran guy. I was okay with them doing what they did, because if they went out and that's when they went and got Eric Johnson, they went out, got Connor Clifton. They're trying to get their defense a little bit better. You need to have good team defense first. And I was okay by committee. Like, let's see who steps up and who grabs a hold of it. And I love what UPL's been doing. But Buffalo, man, I thought this team was absolutely dead to rights for quite some time now. And
yeah, me
like
too.
You said at the top, I mean, they're certainly in this mix as well.
They are. Bo Byram looks great. I mean, he seems to have added a real spark to the Buffalo Sabres as well. It seems as if the dynamic on the power play now is don't overthink it. Just give the puck to Byram and good things will happen. I want to sort of bounce around here with you, though. A couple of things from last night, and I'm really curious your thoughts about this one as a player and now as an analyst as well. Toronto Maple Leafs, Philadelphia Flyers. It's the third period. The Leafs are running away with the game. It's 6-1. And Sheldon Keefe puts out the top power play. Rocky Thompson on the Philadelphia Flyers bench. And Rocky, as you can well recall, was a rather robust player when he played. Let's just say that. Not too thrilled with that. Had a good go at Sheldon Keefe because of it. What do you make of, I know like they're short guys, but like, what do you make about putting out, you know, top power play units in a blowout game like that?
I've kind of changed my tune on this in some regards. I used to probably have that same reaction that Rocky Thompson would have. And probably if I was on the Philadelphia Flyers, I would react that way. But I think sitting here thinking, we know how tedious it is to get and make sure that your special teams are clicking and how important that is. And I just find that in-game work, like that's one thing you can never replicate in practice. I mean, you could talk about power plays working and going through the reps in practice, and that's important, but it's never going to be the same as the pressure you receive in games. And I just think regardless of the score, I'm okay with that. Like I get whatever the circumstances, I'm not going to speak for Sheldon Keefe and the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I don't care. Like, work it. If that's what you need in that moment, then do it. You know what I mean? And I'm okay with that. So I can understand the maybe the other team being a little upset about it, but at the same rate, you know, you don't have much say in that because the game has gotten out of control, and I'm all for it. If you need the work and you want to keep guys sharp, you want to try different things, do it. And otherwise don't let it get out of control like that and you won't get your feelings hurt.
So I got to tell you, Mike Rupp, that is so refreshing to hear a player say that, because I've always felt like when I see coaches or players complain about blowout games and teams running out PP1, I always say to myself, are you asking the other team to take it easy on you? Is that essentially what you're saying? We're so far out of it. Please take it easy on us. Stop playing so hard against us. Because I really do think that's the wrong message to your team. Like, here's your coach complaining that this team is still competing hard. Like, if you're not going to even try to match that, then you deserve that score. Like, I've always found it weird the way that coaches will talk about compete until the final buzzer, but then we'll get upset when another team in a blowout game puts out PP1. Because essentially what you're saying is, take it easy on us. We're losing too badly. Don't embarrass us even more. Does that make sense and resonate with you?
So here's something that I think this is what you're saying, and even the flip side of it. I'm playing, say, when I played and I was on the Pittsburgh Penguins, right?
Yep.
The first power play was always Sid, Gino, Letang. I mean, probably had Gonchar out there at times. Loaded top unit. Wouldn't you get more upset if the other team's winning the game and all of a sudden you see Mike Rupp come over the boards with Eric Goddard? And you know what I mean? Like that to me is like,
yeah,
more of
it's an insult.
We're making a mockery of your team and where you guys are at. Right. Like you know what I mean? And, yeah. And listen, I've had power play time in my career as a net front presence. Like my point being is I wasn't on the first unit.
I know what you're saying.
And if you're bringing in those guys, wouldn't you be more embarrassed that like, hey, these guys are like, oh, you can't handle us, so we're going to give you the guys who never get these looks. But I also think it's good on teams, you know, to maybe give guys some of those opportunities for cookies, because you always want guys to feel good too. So if it's the coach bringing those guys out that aren't usually on it, I love that, to give them a reward. But we never look at it that way. On the flip side, if Toronto's just putting out their third and fourth line guys and guys who are never on the power play, I'd be more offended if I was the Philadelphia Flyers.
You know what that used to be? You know, Rupper, you know what that used to be? That used to be when teams played their backup goalie against you. Like, it's not that way anymore, because teams try to have, like, two really competitive goaltenders, and there's no real such thing as the backup goalie who's just there for the designated loss games. But once upon a time, like, that was it. You would look down the ice, and you'd say, well, that's how much they think of us. They're not even putting their number one starter in there. I mean, I'm sure you've been part of games like that where you look at who's starting for their team, and you're like, wow, they really don't think much of us here.
Yeah, I mean, if you back-to-back games, right? Like, if you're going to get back-to-back games, and I think we used to see it more so in the past where you'll sit there and be like, oh, we're getting the backup. So whoever they played last night or whoever they're playing tomorrow, they must think is a better team and they got more respect for than us. You know what I mean? Yeah, so yeah, I think that was something that we would think about or say, and I think that's changed a little bit. It seems like this stuff is kind of scheduled out for so long now. Everything seems to be scripted is in regards to this is the model and this is the schedule we're going to follow this year. But yeah, that was certainly something.
Let me follow up with something that I sort of positioned as, for me, the feel-good story of the evening. And that was Evgeny Kuznetsov in that Carolina-Florida game. We all know what he's been through. We all know the challenges that he's had, him and his family, and what he's done about it a couple of times to try to correct his life. And he had run out of road in Washington. That was obvious. Sent down to Hershey on waivers, not claimed. That's a tough move for a veteran player. That's a tough one to swallow, into Hershey, and then the trade with the Carolina Hurricanes. And it seems as if, and it's a couple of games now, he's got a new lease on it, and it seems like the Hurricanes, as an organization, the fan base as well, has really gravitated and welcomed him, and he really feels like already he has a home in Raleigh. Do you have a thought on what we saw yesterday, whether it was his first goal, the celebration, the storm surge, the way that he's playing? We should mention Gensel with his first point last night as well. Just have a thought on the Kuznetsov. It's early, but your thought on the Kuznetsov phenomenon in Carolina, because this one could be gold for Carolina if this one really works out.
Yeah, I mean, this could be huge for them, right? And I think that's part of it too. So first and foremost, I think we're all on the same page. We want to see guys get in the right place mentally and get their life in order. Kuzi's got a family. These are all important things that we had him on. We interviewed him the other day, and he seemed to be in a really good place, very humble at this kind of another chance here. And talked about, I think he made reference to about a 10-hour bus ride that he took, in Hershey. And, you don't want to do that anymore. He hasn't had to do that. But also getting an opportunity. I think this is something that's really important for it may be misconstrued by some people because, listen, to be a professional athlete, there's a mindset that you have to have. Like you're how do I word this? Like you have to feel needed. You have to feel important to mm-hmm. the cause, whatever that is. And, you know, I think it kind of got to a place, and I'm not going to speak for him, but a lot of times this happens with players is like, whatever like you mentioned, the road is run out in Washington. But when you have another team kind of step up and be like, hey, you know what? We've been a Stanley Cup contender for years and we need you. Like this could be a difference maker for us. I think from what he's gone through, it's perfect timing for him. He's going into a place that needs him. He can go be himself, his new self, if you will. And it just seems like, speaking to him, that just this weight's been lifted off his shoulders. So, I mean, just talk about a team and what Don Waddell did there, whether it's, you know, it's with him. And then you add in Jake Guentzel. I mean, you've literally manufactured a second line. You don't really see that happen, like a legitimate second line. We'll see where it goes, but I love the passion. Everybody I've spoken to said the guy's hilarious, and he's already made his mark inside that locker room there, and you got the big bird celebration yesterday. Yeah. We'll see where it goes, but I'm happy for Cousy. I really am.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are, and rightfully so. Let me circle back to something that happened earlier this week. And listen, the Detroit Red Wings are in a world of bad right now. Losers of 7 in a row. It wasn't that long ago. We were all getting excited about, you know, the playoff drought is over. Going to see playoff games at the shiny new building. What's that going to be like? Hockey's on fire in Motown, etc. And then all of a sudden, bam, they hit this wall. And Yzerman, outside of moving Koskinen to San Jose, you know, citing salary cap issues, and here what we're paying him wasn't fitting that role, so that's why we moved him out. You know, it seems as if, like, the fan base is frustrated, obviously. Management, ownership, and the players are frustrated as well, to the point where we see Lucas Raymond and Ben Chiarot mix it up at practice. Now, I don't always think that's a bad thing. I think generally it's kind of a good thing, and you've been part of teams where you've seen that before. Sometimes it's hidden away from the prying eyes of media. Other times it's very public, like we saw the other day. There's always been, like, the NHL has a history of players having altercations with each other on the same team. And not that this one is anywhere near as bad as, like, Terry O'Reilly and Derek Sanderson, which may have been maybe the worst. But what did you make of what we saw with Detroit this week between Chiarot and Raymond?
First off, I saw some nice restraint from Ben Chiarot, because I think that would have been pretty one-sided if he decided that he was actually going to, you know, get in a tussle. So, you know, good veteran there, and just kind of whatever. I love emotion. I think we play an emotional game, and teams that lack emotion in games inside the locker room and in practice, they're not going to win anything. So, you know, I'm not in that room, so I don't know if there has been a lack of it, but we saw it. We saw emotion. That's a positive thing, especially for what they're going through right now. You know, you don't want people not be, you know, like, this almost goes back to, you know, a lot of people have always said those things where if you're getting blown out in a game and all of a sudden guys start running around at the end of a game and they're like, well, where you been the whole time? And I get it. It's annoying. Mm-hmm. You know, I was that guy who would do that, but I would also be on the team that was winning. And then you'd be like, all right, man, you've been here all night and you haven't done anything. Why not? You're manufacturing emotion. Like, you just want emotion. And there's so many times where when you lack that, you're done. You have no chance. So I'm a big fan of that. You know, it ended up not being nothing. I mean, obviously you don't want guys slunging it out in practice, but, you know, to bring up the battle level and to add that, infuse that energy. I mean, it's only a positive thing in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. A couple of other things to draw out of last night as well that I wanted to pull from you here. The New Jersey Devils beat the Dallas Stars. Now, I don't know what I should focus on more here. Should I focus on the New Jersey Devils and what they're able to do against a team that has, you know, a legitimate shot at winning the Stanley Cup here? Or do I go negative and say, what's going on with Jake Oettinger? We keep saying all year long, don't worry, Oettinger's going to be fine. Oettinger's going to be fine. Until you look this morning and you look at the hook and you say to yourself, he has a sub-900 save percentage here. And as Steve Valiquette always tells me, save percentage isn't the be-all and end-all here. I get that, but it does look rough when the goaltender has a sub-900. What's the more interesting issue to you, what New Jersey did or the goalie in Dallas?
Probably not what New Jersey did offensively, because I think that New Jersey can be that, has been that the last couple seasons. I know that that's dried up quite a bit this year, but shout out Jake Allen, though, that he was fantastic and good to see him thriving.
Bad start, tough start, two goals on three shots. You're like, I'm not so sure about this.
No, but settled in and made some nice saves as that game went on. But Dallas is that's such a big piece of the puzzle is Jake Oettinger. I mean, they're a really well-built team. But if you're going to talk about them being a contender, that's with Oettinger being lights out. Like, Jake Oettinger, to me, should be listed and known as a top five goaltender in the league, and he hasn't been. So, I don't know. I think that they're a team that, they're still a very good team, but they need him to find his game. And it's almost similar in some regards to what Shesterkin was going through. Like, when Igor didn't look like Igor, I was saying that the Rangers, they're a hoax. They're not going to win. Like, they're built a way that they have to have phenomenal goaltending. I think that's the same thing with Dallas. If Jake Oettinger doesn't look like himself and he's not himself, I think they'll get eaten up in the playoffs. And, they're just a team that is what makes them sharp is their goaltending. And it hasn't been there. So it'll be interesting to see how he finds it. If he does find it down the stretch here. I mean, we've seen it in years past. I mean, remember when we went all the way back to 2018, that was the whole Braden Holtby couldn't find his game. That's Phil Grubauer kind of kept things going a little bit. Holtby got with the goalie coach, got back down, got it back down to the basics. And next thing you know, they end up starting the playoffs with Grubauer. And then Holtby comes in, they go win a Stanley Cup. So I don't know if he needs a little bit of time to get back to the ABCs of goaltending, but he doesn't look like himself, that's for sure.
Not even a bit. Even Alex Lyon and Bobrovsky last year with the Florida Panthers. I mean, if it's not for Alex Lyon, we're not talking about the Panthers going to the Stanley Cup final or maybe even getting into the playoffs, certainly. Okay, last one. You mentioned the Rangers. I'm not going to ask you about what we saw last night. I kind of give the Rangers a little bit of a mulligan this week. 5 games in 7 days for the New York Rangers. What league is this again? Mike Rupp, 5 games in 7 days? Are we in the NHL?
It seems a lot like the AHL right there, you know?
Right?
That's a lot of games.
Doesn't it?
A lot of hockey. Yeah. That's...
2 back-to-backs. Yeah. Woof.
Yeah, it's a tough schedule for New York. And, they've been... They're an interesting one for me because I consider them to be a contender, especially with the way Igor has been playing the last couple weeks or even since the All-Star break, for that matter. He's been playing, like I said, looking a lot more like himself. Last night was that, you're playing against they're an interesting team because they still get sleepy at times. Like, that's a thing with the New York Rangers, and it's been like that for a while. That's why I think is everybody wants to talk about Matt Rempe, everything he's been doing. That's why he's so important to have in that lineup. And that's why Jacob Trouba is so important to have in the lineup, and he's not in there either. Both guys out, obviously. Their group, I find, that gets sleepy. And things like last night can happen, but I also think it was a tough schedule, like you mentioned. Having those guys back in the lineup here soon, hopefully it'll help them.
Yeah, certainly true. Listen, on that we'll wrap. You're the best, man. Always love being on with you. Always love our conversations. You be well. Enjoy the weekend. And we'll check back soon. Thanks as always, Rupper.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff. Anytime, buddy.
There he is, the great Mike Rupp, Stanley Cup champion, scored a Stanley Cup winning goal. You can watch him in a number of places. I watch him on a regular basis on the NHL Network, where he does outstanding work. Okay, here's what else is coming up on the program today, folks. And as always, thank Mike Rupp for stopping by. Jason Demers is going to stop by to kick off hour two, former NHL defenseman. Now he's, of course, on NHL Network as well. Want to get on the Tampa page. Eric Erlandson is going to stop by in hour two to talk about what we just saw last night, specifically from Braden Point, specifically from Nikita Kucherov, Anthony Duclair. We should throw him into the conversation. He's played well. How about that hit last night? Woof. As well. So we'll get on that page with Eric Erlandson. But joining me in a couple of moments here to talk about the Boston Bruins. Big one last night in Montreal. The Bruins win in overtime. Jake DeBrusque is your hero. They beat the Montreal Canadiens 2-1. Jimmy Murphy, our good pal here, is going to stop by in a couple of moments. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Murph is next.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, welcome back to the program. Quick reminder, Eric Erlandson gets us on the Tampa Bay Lightning page. Big win last night against the Rangers. That's coming up in hour two. Don't look now, but Braden Point just had 6 points last night. Holy smokes. Tampa back? Also, Jason Demers, former NHL defender, now analyst with the NHL Network. He will kick off hour two. In the meantime, the last time I chatted with my next guest here was a couple of days ago. And I believe at that point, him and his co-host for his podcast, The Eye Test, Pierre Maguire, were plotting an evening in Montreal. I believe it was supposed to be after last night's game where the Bruins beat the Montreal Canadiens 2-1. And I believe Hurley's was involved. We'll see what transpired with our man, Jimmy Murphy. How are you today, Murph?
I'm great, Mark. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Did you get out to Hurley's?
Well, so actually, we did the pregame at Hurley's, Jeff. We did a show at 4 o'clock. Yeah, and I'll tell you this, Jeff. I'm staying here, as I told you in that conversation the other day. I am sticking around, taking a little vacation for the weekend and staying for the St. Patrick's festivities. But we were very good. It was pregame, so there were no imbibing involved, but there was plenty of it after the game, after that Bruins win.
Yeah, what did you? I want to get on the Bruins page with you here in a second. But the one thing that you and I were talking about the other day. Now, I've only had the chance to work with Pierre Maguire a couple of times, and the most recent one was last year at the draft in Montreal, which would have been two drafts ago now. But it was like, first of all, a tremendous work experience, and you know, even just like going through rinks and going through hotels, or you know, going to work out at the gym, it's always stunning just how connected Pierre is. Like, do you get a sense of that when you travel with Maguire?
Oh my God, it's insane, you know. And not only is he so connected, he's just such a wealth of knowledge too. As you know, I mean, I like to call, and I've told him this. He's kind of the Rain Man of hockey. You know, Dustin Hoffman there in that movie there. It's amazing, but no, it's unreal. And just you know, the welcome he got from all the Montrealers here, and also a plethora of Bruins fans that have invaded this city yesterday, coming up to him as we were broadcasting live at Hurley's there. But yeah, the connections are unreal, and it's great. You know, as you know, you do a show yourself, getting guests. I mean, he's just got the Bible of guests to call on and bring on the show. So I'm so grateful to be doing this show with him, and he's so good to me. And I think the biggest thing I love about him is it's just such a true passion for the game. No matter if it's, you know, women's hockey, men's college hockey, juniors, Kiwi hockey, forget the NHL. I mean, every single level of hockey, he's got his eyes on and knows everything about. And He just loves the game. So it's really a privilege to be doing this show with him.
Yeah, it's I've had a lot of great experiences, and to your point about like he is the Rain Man, absolutely. Okay, to last night, from the Montreal point of view, Nick Suzuki continues to have an excellent season. From the Boston Bruins point of view, nice overtime winner by Jake DeBrusk yesterday. But how did you see? I want to get into the Bruins season so far, and maybe frustrations around deadline and how the Bruins look down the stretch into the playoffs. But give us your snapshot of what we saw yesterday in Montreal. 2-1 overtime win by the Bruins.
Well, first of all, and you know, for our list, I'm sure you're aware, Jeff, for just for people that are listening that might not be aware, that was the 25th overtime that the Bruins have been in this season. They seem to really just like to take it to the limit, as they say. And they haven't done too well, who knows. You know, whether it's losing in overtime or losing in a shootout, you know, they're right up there with getting that loser point instead of getting that extra 2 points. And really, they could be in a much better position, I think, if they figured out a way to get those 2 points sometimes. But here we are, and I think that, you know, it was kind of one of those games, Jeff, where both teams couldn't really find some traction. A lot of missed shots, just a lot of missed passes, what have you. But it was the ugly type of game that this team hasn't been winning, and they did get it. And I think that when you look back on this season to this point, I really think that that's kind of been one of their main issues, is that they tend to sometimes play down to the level of team, and that's no disrespect to the Montreal Canadiens and obviously the rivalry, because no matter what, we discussed it the other day on the eye test, Jeff, no matter what the standings are, those two teams are going to come at each other and you're going to have a good game. But I think it was a good confidence builder for them, because they haven't found a way to win those boring, sleepy games. And sometimes, you know, in the playoffs, you're going to need to find a way to win ugly. That's how you win Stanley Cups. It's not the pretty goal that wins a Stanley Cup or wins a playoff series. It's usually the ugly one. So it was great. You know, you bring up Jake DeBrusk there too. A week ago, Jeff, at this time, none of us know if Jake DeBrusk is going to be a Boston Bruin. You know, him and Linus Ullmark were out there, and we didn't know what was going to happen, if they were going to move. And, you know, a week later, he's now got two goals and an assist in his last three games since the deadline. And I think that has really taken that weight off his shoulders. And Linus as well, he played great last night. I know there weren't a lot of shots, but there were some really good chances by the Canadiens when they did get it on net. So I think that those two guys right now could be key for them going down the stretch, in the sense that they can put that behind them, and they know that they're going to be with the Boston Bruins at least until the end of this season.
How much talk is there in Boston about extending Jake DeBrusk? Do we have a sense?
Yeah, you know, on that note, not to kind of, you know, spin the positive that I just spinned about him into a negative, but it's not a good sense, Jeff. I'll tell you, I mean, the vibe I get and talking to some people behind the scenes is that there's no talks going on right now. It's just kind of stalled since I want to say even back to the preseason. There really hasn't been much. And Jake, you know, to his credit, or sometimes it works against him, but I love it being a reporter. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, and he's blunt with us.
He does.
And a couple times this season, and he's not said it. It's not been in a mean-spirited way. It's been more frustration, because he really loves wearing that Spoke B. He loves being a Boston Bruin. He gets the tradition of it. He gets the history of it. And he loves the city of Boston. And he's puzzled. I think that would be the best word to describe him and to describe the situation right now with him going forward as a Boston Bruin, is it's puzzling, because there really hasn't been much from the team in terms of wanting to extend. They tell us all the time, Montgomery said it again last night when I asked him about DeBrusk, we value him and we love that he loves to be a Boston Bruin. And, you know, they're saying all the right things, but behind the scenes, there's not much going on. And I think at best it's 50-50 that he's with the Bruins after this season. And, you know, look, I hope they keep him, because I think he can really continue to become, I think he can pot 30 goals a season. I think he's a good guy to have in your top six. But, I mean, if you ask me right now, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't be able to put a bet on it right now that if he's here or he's gone next year.
What's the feeling around the Boston Bruins like organization, not the fans, because the fans always want like a sexy, shiny new toy every year at deadline. Bruins didn't get that. Bruins got a lot last year. Didn't get it this year. What's the feeling in the organization? Like, I wonder just how frustrated this organization feels, because it's not as if Sweeney wasn't out there trying to do something with the team. We've all heard the reports of Linus Ullmark, et cetera. But like, how much of a sense of frustration is there around the organization that they weren't able to, in their minds, move this thing forward at deadline?
I think internally, and they're not exactly showing it, and they won't, you know, because that's their job. They don't want to show that publicly. But I think frustration would be the key word there. I think it's pretty obvious, and this is not to take away anything from Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacher and the job they've done coming in and, you know, with two of the greatest centers in Boston Bruins history retiring and taking their spot and trying to replace what Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci brought. And nobody's going to do that. But they've done a very admirable job. I think exceeded expectations, but at the same time, I think as the season has gone on right now, they exceeded it so much that I think it was only a matter of time before it sort of leveled off and they come back down to earth a bit. And I think that's what we've seen in the last month. And I think it's clear given, you know, we all know that Sweeney has had his eyes on Elias Lindholm and I think some other centers as well. I think he's not happy, or I shouldn't say not happy, not satisfied with his top six center position right now. And he would love to get somebody to really come in and solidify that. And I think, you know, they've done it a few times this season, Jeff. I think they really do like Zacha better on the wing. And I think they love having him. They would love to have a guy to put between him and David Pastrnak, because Zacha really loves being on the same line as Pastrnak. But they don't know if maybe he's the 200-foot guy they need in the middle there. And that's not to take away from what he brings, but I think they would love to find somebody to put between those two for next year. And so I think that's going to be a huge target of his in the offseason. And then you go on the back end there, and, you know, it's no secret that he had his eye on Noah Hanifin since the 2015 draft. And he really focused in on him again this year and trying to acquire him. I think they'd like to solidify that top four. And if they could get a guy like that, I mean, I don't know if Hanifin hits the market. My gut is he stays in Vegas. But, you know, if they could get somebody there to really solidify that top four in defense, he'd be happy. And they've got plenty of cap space coming up in the summer. So he's going to have some money to shop with.
Not that you can ever tell a team to lose, because you can't. Like, players won't do it. Coaches won't do it. Managers can kind of stick handle around to try to give themselves the best chance. But here's what I want to get to. Who would the Boston Bruins rather face in the opening round? Because if they finish second, they're going to face off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we all know the history there. And the hockey gods very much smile on Boston in that matchup. Or will they go? Would they rather go at mystery door number two, which right now would include any combination of either the Islanders, the Red Wings, the Capitals, the Buffalo Sabres, and if you squint hard enough, the New Jersey Devils? Which one would they prefer?
Well, I just, you know, I was just listening to you before I came on with Mike Rupp, and man, I love listening to Mike Rupp talk hockey with you. But, you know, like, who the heck, why isn't anybody stepping up to the plate here and taking that spot, right? It's amazing that there's so many teams still involved. Look, Bruins fans will say, bring on the Leafs, we own them. But, you know, I think Bruins fans need to take a step back, and I'm not sure if we've had this, if we talked about this the other day, Jeff, I forget. But I look at the Maple Leafs right now, Jeff. And I'm going to draw an analogy into another sport when it comes to the Maple Leafs and the Bruins. And I'm going to look into baseball.
Okay.
And I see them as the Boston Red Sox before they broke the curse against the New York Yankees. So the Bruins, ironically, are the Yankees in this situation. And the Maple Leafs are the Red Sox. And, man, the Maple Leafs do to get over the hump and beat the Boston Bruins. And if I'm the Bruins, I don't want anything to do with the Maple Leafs. The people can say all they want about the Maple Leafs. They've got plenty of faults right now. But to me, that series to them would almost be their Stanley Cup. They will be that revved up. That city will be that revved up. They're due. They're long overdue. And I just feel like you talked about the hockey gods there. Well, the hockey gods can smile on you for a while, but they always end up putting that smile on somebody else later on. I don't want that. So I would rather one of the group of teams that you said there from the Bruins that are coming in the eighth or seventh seed there in the wild card.
You know, I got about 90 seconds for this one. Probably not enough time, but here we go. You look at a team this year like the Edmonton Oilers, and going into this season, Murph, what they tried to do with the team, argue amongst yourselves whether it's been successful or not, certainly not to kick off the season, they've tried to play a style of game that is a little bit Vegas Golden Knights and a little bit Boston Bruins from last season. Now you need the horses to do that, obviously, but that was a special season from the Boston Bruins. Who's the measuring stick team this year for Boston? Like, Boston isn't, at times they have been, but they're not like the top dog, you know, make no mistake about it, team in the Eastern Conference. Who's the one, how about this one? Who's the one team that gives Boston fits more than anybody else?
Ooh, that's a, you know what, that's a good question. You know, one team, and it's not just this year, it's been for a couple years now, that they seem to kind of get rattled by in games is the Detroit Red Wings. You know, there's been some really back and forth games with them, and they find a way to kind of get under the skin of the Bruins and make them take some dumb penalties at times, and they've beaten them at times. So that's a team I would, you know, if I'm Don Sweeney and Jim Montgomery, I'm kind of like, I maybe don't want to play those guys in the playoffs because they seem to really kind of rattle us, and they seem to have our number at times and really bring out the wrong emotions in us within a game.
Well, they're doing their best right now trying to make sure that's not even a conversation. Losers of seven games in a row.
We're gonna
see some Detroit Red Wings playoff hockey. It's been, the rug has been pulled out, and you know, Lucy has pulled the football away from Charlie Brown. Murphy, you're the best, pal. Love you. Enjoy Montreal for the weekend. As you well know, it's one of the greats. I've been there for St. Patrick's Day as well. It is a scene, man. You're gonna love it. Murph, we'll catch up soon, pal. You be in touch, and good luck surviving the weekend in Montreal.
And Jeff, Pierre McGuire told me to say hello, and he missed you the other day. And next time you're on, he's looking forward to it.
Love it. Please send my best to Pierre. I'll shoot him a text after the show. Wonderful, wonderful guy. I had a great time with him in Montreal, interestingly enough, a couple of years ago. So thanks as always, Murph. You be well, my friend.
All right. Cheers, brother.
There is the great Jimmy Murphy. Stops by filling us in on the Boston Bruins. Check out his podcast, The Eye Test. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, Bet Local. Shades of 1986, shades of 1989, which, as we all know, was the last time the two Canadian teams met in the Stanley Cup final. That is Calgary, and that is Montreal. And that is our game that we're mentioning right now. We watch it tomorrow, Hockey Night in Canada. Montreal Canadiens, the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, facing off against the Calgary Flames. Flames minus 1.5. The total has gone under in 4 of Montreal's last 5 games. Montreal 3-10 straight up in their last 13. Montreal 5-1 straight up in their last 6 games against Calgary. The total has gone over in 7 of Calgary's last 9 games. Calgary 7-3 straight up in their last 10 games against an opponent in the Atlantic Division. Calgary 4-2 straight up in their last 6 games played on a Saturday. Gutsy win over Vegas yesterday. 4-1 is the final score. 4 goals in the third. That was special. Blake Coleman, by the way, with a pair of goals yesterday. He now has 28. Yegor Sharangovich has 28 goals this season as well. 3-game goal streak there. He's been outstanding. One quick note on Blake Coleman, by the way. He has 18 third period goals as number 1 in the NHL, tied with Zach Hyman of the Edmonton Oilers. Montreal dropped a 2-1 overtime victory, loss to the Boston Bruins last night. Nick Suzuki, though, bright spot for the Habs this season. 26 goals. That is a personal and career high for Nick Suzuki. Look forward to this one tomorrow on Hockey Night. This is the Montreal Canadiens and the Calgary Flames. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Jason Demers coming up in a couple of moments. Also, we'll get on the Tampa Bay Lightning page. What was that last night with Eric Erlandson? Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. NHL Network analyst, the great Jason Demers, joins me in moments. Keep it here.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Only a couple of games on the go around the NHL this evening after a dozen yesterday. Some really interesting games last night. I know off the top of the show we made a lot, and rightfully so, but the Buffalo Sabres and their shutout against the New York Islanders, they're in it. The Washington Capitals dispatching the Seattle Kraken, they're in it. The Detroit Red Wings losing their seventh game in a row. Technically, they're still in it, but New Jersey handling the Dallas Stars, are they in it? Maybe if you squint hard enough, you can say yes. All of a sudden, it's kind of jump ball in the East here, right? A lot of things are at play. So I'll have a lot of games to play. And maybe the most interesting game last night was Florida-Carolina. That was a game that was owned by the Carolina Hurricanes, and Yevgeny Kuznetsov with his first goal. And we saw the bird celebration, and they did that as part of the storm surge. There's just a couple of things to pull out from last night. Tonight is only a pair of games, and they're both early, 8 o'clock Eastern, 8:30 Eastern as well. 8:30 Eastern, you can watch the Los Angeles Kings face off against the Chicago Blackhawks. Bedard has just run away with the Calder, right? Like, that's like a couple of other players are making noise, but like Bedard's back and that's it, and he's going to scoop up the voice, the votes, and we're done, right? Anyway, your chance to watch the Blackhawks and the Los Angeles Kings, and also the Anaheim Ducks facing off against the Winnipeg Jets. Now, it's always bad when a player goes down. It's always bad when a player has an injury and there's no definite timetable. And it's extra bad when it's one of your favorite players. And for me, that's been Gabe Landeskog, and I'm still waiting. And also Gabe Vilardi. So a pair of Gabes or a couple of favorite players of mine. We'll see about Landeskog in the playoffs for the Avalanche. But Gabe Vilardi, bad news here again. Man, you always say to yourself, man, if only Vilardi could just stay healthy. Is that a skill or is that just luck? Gabe Vilardi has an enlarged spleen. No timetable for his return. That announced today by Winnipeg Jets head coach Rick Bowness. Again, I've said this before about Vilardi so many times. Around the net, the caveat being, of course, he's got to stay healthy. But around the net, dots down, in the slot, that guy is money. That guy is super strong. That guy is skilled. Good luck lifting up his stick. He will win puck battles down low. He's an absolute terror for the opposition. You just want Gabe Vilardi of the Winnipeg Jets to get and stay healthy. Whether it's injuries like we saw in the beginning of the season from hits, or in this case, enlarged spleens. Ugh. Please just stay healthy. Gabriel Vilardi. Anyway, those are the two games on board tonight. Anaheim Ducks facing off against Winnipeg Jets. Los Angeles Kings take on the Chicago Blackhawks. In the meantime, pleasure to welcome to the program one of my favorite defenders when he played. I'm not going to lie to you. He is Jason Demers, now of the NHL Network, and he joins me now. Jason, how are you today?
Good. You are definitely lying. One of your favorite defenders. Come on now.
I would have so many conversations with people in the analytics community, and one of the things that we would always agree on is, why is everybody sleeping on Demers? I said it when you were in Dallas and you were playing on a team with like a 22-year-old Tyler Seguin. I said it with when you played with the Florida Panthers and you were playing with a 75-year-old Jaromir Jagr. I always said one of the guys that no one talks about, they should talk about, is Jason Demers. So listen, thanks so much for stopping by the program. Let Let me ask you about that. You know, we've just had this big celebration of Yager in Pittsburgh, and then the bobblehead thing yesterday, and you know, he's, you know, charming as all heck wherever he goes. And I know there's a lot of acrimony between him and the Pittsburgh Penguins, etc. But you know, you were in Florida with Jaromir Jagr. Yep. You know, still quite productive. What were your takeaways from being around Jagr the time that you were in Florida?
I mean, his work ethic is just unmatched, and but in such a weird way. It's just the things he does around the rink nobody does, and I don't think nobody will ever kind of recreate it. And the way he thinks the game was so different. So, but he has so many funny little nuanced things that he does, and you know, there's, I think every guy that's played with him has a million stories of how he trained. And I mean, when I was with him, he taped 2-pound weights to his skates for training camp and started playing in training camp. And then he was surprised that he felt so good. So he literally started the first like 10, 15 games of the season in an NHL season with 2-pound weights on his skates. Cause he was like worried if he took them off, he'd feel different. Just like it was that year was, I couldn't believe it. Like I had a hard enough time. I needed everything to be perfect weighted. And he was adding on extra weight to his body just to kind of get out there, just to feel good. So he's something special, though. I mean, he's such a great player and was still so good in that big body, knowing where to put it on the ice. And he thought the game in such a unique way that allowed him to play this as long as he did and be as dominant so late in his career.
You know, we talk so much. That's really interesting about the weights on the skates. Like, if you would have told me that he was, you know, skating with a weight vest, I probably would believe you too. Just watching all those times where he had the weight vest on and he was doing, you know, did he skate with the in games with the weight vest?
No, he had practice. He would have the weight vest. He'd have weights on his skates, and the weight vest and. He'd walk around the room and ankle weights and the weight vest on. And I mean, it just was, it's so surreal to think back that, and that year was such a weird year with, you know, the firing at Gallant and the kind of changeover. So it was such a tough year as a team wise. You forget some of those stories that I played with this legend that was just so larger than life and so different. So it's so funny to think back on those moments and be like, that guy was out of his mind.
Well, the interesting thing about it too is, I mean, a lot of it is like just like really old school basic training. Put the waist vest on and go run the stairs. You know, tape some weights to your skates. Was he still doing the wrist curls with like the quarter hockey stick and the string and the weight? Like, he would do those, and he had Popeye forearms. Like, was he still doing that by the time he was in Florida with you?
Yeah, he was putting a medicine ball up against the wall. And with his stick and like shooting it against the wall. And he rigged his stick to one of those pulley cable machines. You know, if you do tricep extensions or ever done bicep curls. So he rigged it. So he like drilled a hole in his stick so he could hook up his stick to the actual pulley cable. And he just practiced putting on as much weight as possible and putting his stick on the ice. And he would do drills in practice with guys at the end with the D. He'd say, all right, guys, I'm going to go to the net. And, you know, he'd get Barkey or somebody to pass him the puck from the goal line to him. Yeah. He's like, try to lift my stick. Try to get under my stick. And it was honestly like you were trying to lift 300 pounds off the ice. When he'd get that tripod going, it was incredible.
The industry standard for that, for the good luck lifting my stick, was always historically, you talk to the old timers and they'll always tell you like Gordie Howe. Like Gordie Howe was a guy, like you could not lift Gordie's stick. Like, good luck, not a chance. I was told the same about a couple of players. Jagr, certainly. Pavel Datsyuk, I was told that he had a heart for what a really deceptively strong lure, but he couldn't get his stick up. Like, who are some of those other guys that, you know, as a defender, I want to get back to Jagr here, but just curious, Jason, as a defender, whose stick was really hard to lift up?
Well, categorically, the hardest player I ever played against was Datsyuk. He was so strong, so elusive, used his body so well. anytime he was behind you, like you, if you kind of made a move and beat him up ice, you were so scared skating up the ice because he was just kind of waiting to pickpocket you, a lot like Connor does and McDavid and a lot of these guys now. Yeah. They become so good at pickpocketing, but he was kind of the gold standard back then, and just so incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, like his strength, when he would, I mean, he would push the puck kind of a foot or two in front of him, and as a defenseman, you'd kind of go to poke check. And typically when you're poke checking, you're one-handed. And he would just put his stick in front of the puck as you're poke checking. And it honestly felt like you were breaking your wrist just because he would just put weight on it. So you'd go to poke check him, and then your wrist kind of folds under you, and then he just kind of keeps skating with the puck. So just thought the game at a different level.
One follow-up on Jágr. What was up with his stick? It always, and even now, like you see him out, like a couple of weeks ago playing in that skate with the Penguins, he had like this weird true stick and the blade looked totally bizarre, like real flat heel for one, flat toe. Did you ever get a chance to see what kind of stick Jágr was using?
I looked at it. I was never, in all honesty, and probably I could have played an extra 3-4 years if I'd have focused on my stick and all the little tips and tricks. I mean, I never kind of worried about all these minor adjustments. I kind of just grabbed it out of the bag, and mm-hmm. I had my pattern that I liked and my flex that I liked, and that's what I went and rolled with. I try not to think too much about that, but he was just a doctor. He'd doctor everything. Every piece of equipment, he had a toolkit out for that. So it really was incredible. I mean, that's why that guy played as many years as he did, is things like that he just, the attention to detail. But yeah, his stick was always a little Frankenstein-y, and if it wasn't going good, it would get tweaked. And then if it was
a little
going
Frankenstein-y,
good,
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys that are, these guys are so good. You know, Ryan O'Reilly's another one that just, he kind of flicks the toe at the end. It's for pucks on the wall, and it's these little things that I don't know if it's in their head or it actually does benefit them just to have that, but he had some wild stuff going on with his equipment.
Let me focus on a couple of teams that you played with. And I've mentioned the Dallas Stars and mentioned the Florida Panthers as well. I want to get on the San Jose Sharks page a little bit and that market, your time with it, what you can tell us about San Jose. But you played on the Dallas Stars at a time where, you know, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, John Klingberg would have ruled the roost at that point. You know, I was talking to Mike Rupp in the first hour, and we were talking about everything looks great with Dallas right now, except Jake Oettinger. And it's pretty uncomfortable when, you know, you have, you know, killers up front and killers on the back end, and a lot of it can be undone if you don't get the goaltending. How concerned are you? How concerned should we be that there's this level that the forward group and the back end on Dallas bring, and the net mining isn't there with them right now?
Yeah, this is probably the first time Jake struggled in his career. So it's, you know, he's kind of had some ups and downs, but this is kind of one of those ones where it's a little bit scary, where he's getting yanked and he's not keeping them in game. So I don't know if he's fatigued and he kind of needs a mental reset like Igor had, but, you know, to your point, we're getting close to the playoffs here. So it's tough to kind of have a be faltering this late in the year. I'm not worried. I think he's a big game player. I think when the lights kind of are going to shine bright, I think he's going to elevate his game. And obviously, listen, Wedgie's there, Wedgwood's there. And if they do need him to lean on him for a game, you know, he's still very capable as a backup, but you just hope as a team that they rally around him. I know they got some great veterans there. So with Pavelski, Ben, you know, Seggy now, Duchesne, I mean, the list goes on and on of these older veterans that they have that can kind of pull them along and say, hey boys, like we got them, you know, make the first save and we'll get everything else and we'll clean up the rebound. So, but, you know, right now they're in a playoff spot. They're good. You know, I think in the West, it doesn't really matter where you are, where you're going to finish, because I think it's pretty stacked in both divisions. You're just going to have to go through the gauntlet. You know, I think the West is a lot more challenging than the East this year in terms of to a man, to a team from A. So like if I'm a team, I'm like, listen, let's just make it. Let's make sure all our ducks are in a row for when we start the playoffs and try to get home ice advantage. And if we can't, we're going to have to go through everybody anyway. So, and I think they're a team that kind of have that pedigree and they can. So right now I'd say no, but if it continues, you know, for another 5-10 games, I'd be a little worried.
Who impresses you? I want to focus on the West specifically, because I think you're right. Like, I think the vast majority of elite teams in the NHL this year exist in the Western Conference, which, you know, when you really think about it, you know, we saw a lot of talent drain from the West to the East last year. And, you know, getting to the Stanley Cup final was such a grind that the Florida Panthers were going on fumes by the time they got there. I don't know who's going to win the West this year, but I do know they're going to get beaten up by the time they get there. So even though there are better teams in the West, the grind to get out is going to be that much worse. But who impresses you? Like, Dallas is obviously on that list, but who does it for you, Jason Demers, in the Western Conference?
I'm a sucker for old school structure, kind of grind, knockdown, 2-1 games, 1-0 games. I know I'm boring that way, but you know, I watched the Jets a few times.
Defender.
I watched the Jets a few times this year, and I mean, their structure is incredible. I think they're going to be a tough out. You know, obviously, you can talk to the Vegas Golden Knights that they've just put together. We talk about a Frankenstein lineup. I mean, they just go out and shoot from the hip. So I'm interested to see what Vegas can, how they can gel, bring in all those. Because, you know, for me, with the trade deadline, it's not always the biggest names that give you the best return. It's who fits well within your team and who can kind of just slide into a role that's needed. So I'm interested to see how all those big names work together. I mean, obviously, we have to talk about Nashville, the Predators. I mean, what Andrew Brunette's done there as a coach, what they've done there with that group of part youth, part old, you know, and they were sellers at the beginning of the year, and they literally, this team said, you know what, we're going to show you that you can trade some guys, but we're going for a run. And I mean, Roman Josi's been absolutely incredible, and it's just a credit to that team, that system. They got everybody playing the right way, and Jeff, you know, and you've covered this long enough, and when everybody's pulling in the right direction, you know, like Florida last year, it doesn't matter if you're a little less talented, you're going to beat those teams that don't have all their T's crossed and their I's dotted. So it's just, a team like Nashville would scare me right now in the playoffs big time. I wouldn't want to get them. Yep. Like, a team I'd want to get is the Kings. I think the Kings will make it. I don't know. I don't think they have enough this year. I think they have some holes on the back end. You know, they're kind of pieced it together, and I don't know if that goaltending duo can get them there. And, you know, I've just kind of talked about every team in the West right now. But then, obviously,
no, but let me try to pull a couple things out of what you said, because I think it's fascinating. And I'm glad you brought up Nashville. And look, like, Jeremy Lozon here is, what is his number, 321 hits so far. Or maybe it's more than that. I wrote this down. Yeah, 321 hits so far this season. The record is 382 by Matt Martin of the New York Islanders. He is on pace to beat that by 10, 12, 15 hits. So that's one interesting sidebar story to the Nashville Predators. And the one thing we've always known about Nashville, and you can appreciate this as a defenseman yourself, they've always had high-end defenders. Like, I know it's always been a goalie factory too. That's true. They've always been looking for more goal scoring. That's true. But they've always had great defenders. You mentioned Roman Josi, but the one guy that I keep coming back to, and I still maintain, you know, this was, you know, that last piece that Tampa really, I don't know if they had to get rid of him. I understand the salary cap, but could they have massaged it a different way to keep him? But the straw that broke the camel's back there with Tampa, I still think, is Ryan McDonough. And I look at him in the playoffs. And I was talking to Hal Gill about this the other day here on the show, and he brought up a really good point. He said, you know, the one thing about Ryan McDonough is he gets back to position maybe faster than anybody in the NHL. Like, he knows what he's supposed to do, and he gets back to that spot and back to his position quicker than anybody. Eats pucks, does whatever. I think he's one of the more underrated player, one of the most underrated high-end players in the league. As much as we talk about Josi, and I mentioned Lozon with the hit record that he's going for, I keep coming back to Ryan McDonagh on that blue line and how much he makes the whole thing work. Agree, disagree on McDonagh?
No, I've been a huge fan of his my whole career. I love the way he plays. He's very straight line, but with a purpose, and he's so good defensively. He's a warrior. He can move pucks. He just kind of plays this like simple game, but it's so hard to recreate. So I'm a big fan of his. He's, listen, their decor is a lot deeper than people think. You mentioned Lozon, you know, they're bigger.
Yep.
You know, you got Luke Shen as well. You know, they lean on guys, they can move pucks, and they play together. And you know, Josi kind of just can bounce between all these guys. But yeah, Ryan is just, he's your PK guy. He's the guy that if you're 20 seconds left in the game, you're up one, you're a D-zone drop, he's the guy that's going out there, and he's the guy that's going to either go into the corner, win that battle and get it down, or he's going to be the guy that's going to eat that puck from the point. And mm-hmm. having a guy like Josi, and Josi, I got to say it right, a guy like Roman leaning on somebody like Ryan McDonagh with that pedigree is probably so helpful for him. And a guy like that in the room.
For sure.
Talking to your decor and being like, listen, guys, like, we have it in here. This is how we have to play. And, you know, you also got Ryan O'Reilly there. Like, you just have so many guys with such a high pedigree and who have mm-hmm. won. And won consistently and always been on good teams and have always played the right way. And it's these young kids that were there too are learning fast. And even the veterans that have kind of been around the league are learning what it takes to win. And they've bought in. And obviously it starts with the coaching staff. And that coaching staff's been absolutely phenomenal this year, giving these guys room to play and giving them a system that works for them. And then, you know, you've got Saros and Nett, who the only thing is I'm not – sure, I'm very firm believer in the big goalies win the cups, just because everything's played in tight in the playoffs and everything's on the ground, and you need a goalie that can cover the net like a Jacob Markstrom, and who's it's just one of those guys that he's a little small. We played him in the bubble year and with the Coyotes, and I mean we didn't really have a team that should have beat them. Nashville, but we beat him because we, and in the room we're all saying the same thing, just get somebody net front, he's not going to see anything, and just put everything to the net and make it dirty. So he's such a great goalie, I'm a huge fan of his, but I just don't know for a playoff run if that's the guy that can get you there just because of his size.
The one thing that I remember someone told me this a while ago, it was a goalie coach with another team. We were talking about Josi, and we were talking about why there are so few smaller goaltenders in the NHL. To your point, there was a default for size. I do think that there is, by the way, a standard that is actually too big in some cases, and goalie's mobility might not necessarily be what you need for the NHL, but I'll park that conversation. But here, there's one thing that he told me about smaller goaltenders that's always stuck with me. And as a defenseman, you can probably relate to this. Big goaltenders can make an accidental save, a save that they make just because they're big. They didn't mean to make it. It just happened. And it happens in every single game. Well, why did Markstrom make that save? Well, because he's big. And the puck just hit him because he's big. And he said, the thing about smaller goaltenders is there's no accidental saves. They actually have to make every single save. There's no lucky saves because there's no size to go along with it. And that's the one thing that I've sort of always stuck with, and it's always been in the back of my mind. If you don't have a big goalie, you don't get the accidental save. And as you all know, sometimes like that one accidental save is the difference between winning and losing. Now, having said that, I look at a team like the Colorado Avalanche, and I know that everyone in the Central is always saying, we want to finish first because we don't want to face, you know, in Colorado's case, we don't want to face Winnipeg. We don't want to face Dallas. We all know what the Central's like with the top three. But if you finish first in the Central, you're getting Nashville in the first round. So it's not exactly the bargain that you might have thought that it is, because yeah. To your point, Brunette's got them humming. They got a veteran team. They got a really good defense, And they have the potential, much like Seattle did last year in the opening round, to shock a team. Like, all season long, I've said, yeah, you have to finish first in the Central, got to finish first. Now I'm not so sure when you look at what Nashville's done, eh?
Yeah, there's an upset alert. They're definitely a team that can shake things up 100%. And Colorado, if they kind of come in healthy and, you know, if Gabe makes it back, I mean, they're tough. They're tough to beat, I think, to a man. You know, Valanciunas coming back, he's such a big part of that team. And, again, I just look at, you know, Nat, we talk about goalie sizes, and, you know, you look at Nashville and you put Valanciunas in net front in front of him, or Rantanen in front of him, I mean, he's not seeing that puck coming through. So, and you know, that's definitely going to be, if I'm playing Nashville, that's what I'm doing, is I'm getting as many bodies to the net, and we are just going to make it ugly and make them uncomfortable and frustrate them and make sure that these D have to either clear us out and take a penalty, or he's got to fight through some traffic. So, but they're definitely, you know, they're playing the underdog role, and as they should, and they're going to, that's what they've kind of been rolling with. And I think there's a lot of belief in that room. And if the team's not ready and they kind of come in lackadaisical and Nashville steals the game and you got to go back and play in that building in Nashville, that's one of the best buildings to play in come playoff time. I mean, look out. You could be down or tied with them going into like a pivotal game five or something. So that it's going to be exciting. I was talking to my dad on the phone this morning, and he was just like, he's like, this is going to be like a great playoffs this year. And I was like, it's going to be top to bottom. Because, you know, some years he watches all hockey all day, and he's just like, some years like, those playoffs were horrible. He's like, I didn't even watch. He's like, this is going to be wild this year. I'm like, I think there's going to be a few surprises, and it's going to be a war, especially in the West. And now the East is, you know, I thought the East made some good trades for some guys, and I think now the East is going to be, there's some teams where I'm like, I had Florida out to a lead and said Florida, no chance anybody's touching them. And sorry, you like my segue, I jumped right to the Eastern Conference. Because
I like that.
The West.
It's good.
Yeah, for our NHL Network fans that are all on the East Coast. But I was watching. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was going to say, you were watching what, Jason? Go ahead, please.
Well, I tweeted about, there's two guys where I was like, I think these are the trades that, if they pan out, was Duclair in Tampa and Kuznetsov in Carolina. And I'm looking like a genius, because I was like, if there's a coach that can connect with Kuznetsov and get at least 80% out of this guy, I mean, that's the game breaker they need for pennies on the dollar. And I mean, it's to get him, he's got no pressure out in Carolina. He's just playing. He doesn't have to be the guy. They have a great team. The system's very easy to play. It's very straightforward. Anybody that I've talked to that played for Carolina is like, you can play it in your sleep. It's just very simple. So I think it's just kind of freed him up. And I mean, any indication you watch the last two games, I mean, he looked unbelievable last game. And that's scary if I'm a team in the East that you got Kuzi coming in. And they already have. The thing is, like, they're not short on workers. You know, they got – and, again, they got Gensel, too. They're not short on workers. They're not short on – you know, if their goaltending's healthy, it's solid. Their D-core is one of the best in the league. And I'm like, they just needed another game-breaker to go along with Svechnikov. And they get Gensel and Kuznetsov. Yep. So I'm like, that's scary. And I had Florida running away with it. And now, you know, Ekblad gets hurt. And I'm a little worried with Florida, but – and then, you know, you look at Tampa, who's another one. They get Duclair and they get Dumba, and all of a sudden it's like they needed to shore up their D. They needed another shooter up front, and they just blew the doors off. And Duke's got two goals, so it's like already. So it's interesting. Yep. And like I said, it's gonna be a fun one. I'm excited to kind of get into the playoffs. We still got a long ways to go, but I mean, it's going to be interesting.
I'm with you. I'm with you. And the other thing about Duclair, as you well know, is that factor of speed and pushing defensemen back and easy zone entry. Like Duclair is, to me, Duclair should have been one of the more highly sought after players at deadline. Oh. And good on the Tampa Bay Lightning for grabbing him. We're up against the clock. Jason, thanks so much for stopping by. Continued success at the NHL Network. And we'll check back. Playoffs are around the corner. Thanks so much for doing this, pal.
All right. Anytime, Jeff. Cheers, buddy.
There he is, former NHL defender with the San Jose Sharks, the Dallas Stars, Florida Panthers, Arizona Coyotes, a couple of games with the Edmonton Oilers as well, and was a very underrated defenseman in his own right and had a really nice career. How many games did Demers play? He was a seventh-round pick, and he played 700 NHL games. That's fantastic. And he also mentioned Tampa, and he mentioned Anthony Duclair, Duke, and he mentioned Matt Dumba. And we think back to what Tampa did last night against the New York Rangers, specifically Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov, but not just those two, the whole team. Eric Erlandson comments on the Tampa Bay Lightning. What did last night mean for the Tampa Bay Lightning? Was that the plant the flag, we're back? No question marks about us and the playoffs, thank you very much. Or was it just, man, the Rangers are playing 5-7. That's a tired team. We'll get Eric Erlandson's thoughts on that one and the rest of the Tampa Bay Lightning story in moments. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So there's, and you're probably the same way, there's a number of teams around the NHL, and I kind of say to myself, how should I feel about this team right now? This legit, this fool's gold, this a mirage, this a thin veil, or is this a lock? Think that way about the Detroit Red Wings. Think that way about the New York Islanders. I think we all wonder about the Buffalo Sabres last night after that win against the New York Islanders. Congratulations, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, again. And sometimes we wonder about the St. Louis Blues in that regards. And maybe we also wonder about the Tampa Bay Lightning. Who are they? Are they that team that we remember being juggernauts, winning Stanley Cups, smashing records, sending players to the Hall of Fame one day? Or are they a team that is in downturn? Sometimes they look like that. And then other times, like last night, they look like that team that rattled off Stanley Cups. Thank you very much. One of the best teams, maybe the best team of this generation. Eric Erlandson is joining me now. I talk to Eric on a consistent basis here on the program. Lightninginsider.ca is the website to check out. Eric, how are you today? And I'll start with that question. I really don't know how I feel about Tampa. How should I feel about the Tampa Bay Lightning in your estimation?
Probably a little in between of what you said there. And by the way, hi, Jeff. It's okay. Yeah, there have been times this year where they've looked dominant. They went into the All-Star break, you know, 8 wins out of 9 games. And, you know, they look like they were on track. And then they come back from the All-Star break and they look like they'd been off for 10 days and couldn't find their game. And so they've been stretches of inconsistency this year. And even last night's game was almost a perfect example of that, right? For 30 minutes, they had no life. They had 8 shots on goal up until Braden Point made it a 2-1 game with about 8 minutes to go in the second period. And the Rangers were in complete control of that game. And the Lightning didn't have an answer. They couldn't get inside. They couldn't maintain any sort of zone time in the offensive zone. They were chasing the puck in the defensive end. The Rangers had control of that game. And then, for lack of a better term, the switch flipped. Braden Point picks off a pass, scores the goal, and they just kind of go from there. And, you know, they even fell behind less than 2 minutes into the third period, but they weren't going to let that derail them. And so they're a little bit in between. They're not the same team that was winning championships. They don't have that same type of depth up and down the lineup, but they're still a team that's going to make the playoffs and could do some damage.
You know, have really been impressed by, and listen, it's tough to distinguish yourself on a bad team like the San Jose Sharks. I get that. But watching Anthony Duclair with the Tampa Bay Lightning, I'm getting that soap and warm water feeling again. when we watched him playing with the Florida Panthers. The speed is incredible. We all know how important zone entries are at any time, but specifically in the playoffs. And there are very few that can push blue liners back the way that Duclair can on his own entry. I want to get to Dumba here in a couple of seconds, but what have you made of Anthony Duclair so far in Tampa? To me, it looks like this is a hand-to-glove fit. What about you?
Oh, he looks like he's played here for 5 years, right? And it's only been two games. And, you know, he starts the first game against the Flyers on a line with Anthony Cirelli and Steven Stamkos, scores a goal, has an assist. He's number two power play. Okay, looks like he's a good fit. And then last night, on the very first shift, he was paired with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov. They score the goal. Mm-hmm. And the next shift on the ice together, they score the second goal. Duclair ties the game late in the second. He has just been, for a player who hasn't even been here a full week yet, like he's been with this team forever. And maybe the familiarity having played against them for all those years with the Florida Panthers, maybe that helps, you know, jump into what type of a team they are on the ice. It's not necessarily going to help in the locker room, but he's been really good in the locker room too. And, you know, one of the things I remember Julian Brisebois saying last week when he talked about acquiring Duclair was the speed. Obviously, it's a big part of his game. But the aspect he talked about is how he can back defenses off with that speed. Yep. And now maybe you're going to put him on a line with Braden Point, who does the same thing, and the amount of space that can open up for both players. Oh, and by the way, Nikita Kucherov, John Cooper moves the lines around a lot. We'll see what it sticks with. We'll see what it starts with tomorrow in Florida. But last night, for sure, those three on the same line were dynamic.
Let me ask one more thing about Duclair. When you saw the Ryan Lindgren hit last night, did you think, and the stick is gone, did you think he was getting up as quickly as he did? I was shocked to see him pop back up as fast as he did.
Well, I just think that shows how big he is too, right? Like, he can absorb a hit like that. And I mean, Lindgren didn't get all of them. He got a good portion of them, so he didn't take him completely out. But that was a heavy hit. And I can't say I was surprised, because I don't really know Duclair that much as a player, just having seen him on opposing teams through the years. But that was quite a hit. And I think because he got up so quickly, I think that fired up his team and the crowd a little bit.
No doubt. It must have. Like, there were a lot of things, to your point, like in the second half of that game that went right for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and everything's just sort of clicked together. And I know we can make the excuses about the Rangers' schedule. I think that's legit. And they got a back-to-back, you know, coming up this weekend too. It's a real tough 5-7. 5-7, Eric, for the New York Rangers this week. It's a bizarre one for the New York Rangers. But we talk so much about high-skilled teams, albeit older. And when you have a team like that, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are the best example, they've been this way for the last 5 years. When you have an older yet highly skilled team, it seems as if when they take the pedal, they take their foot off the pedal even a little bit, it kind of starts to fall apart, right? It's like the, what do they call it, Eric? The bicycle theory, that as long as you're pedaling and you keep pedaling, everything's going to be fine. But the minute you start to slow down the pedaling or stop pedaling and just try to coast on it, that's when you fall off. Is there a sort of bicycle theory thing happening here with the Tampa Bay Lightning? Not unlike what we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Because when they cook, they cook. But if they take the foot off even a little bit, the whole thing crumbles.
I think there's a little bit to that. I think Tampa Bay is a little bit different, just in the fact that, yes, you have Hedman, you have Stamkos, and Killorn was here. Obviously, he's in Anaheim now. But they have younger core players as well, right? Brandon Hagel is 25 years old. Braden Point just turned 28. You know, Kucherov just turned 30. So you have these players that are still in different trajectories in their career, having won cups with this team. Having said that, yes, there are moments where when one thing goes wrong, everything goes wrong. And it just falls apart. And we've seen that. Like, they had a 4-1 lead in Toronto earlier this year. One thing bad went against them. They end up losing that game, right? Because they, for a team that's won championships and a team that has the experience core that they have, to watch them have those type of moments is a little odd. And it's a different team. There's a bunch of new faces in that locker room this year. But yeah, there are moments where when the wheels fall off, they just completely fall apart.
Were you surprised at the deadline from, we mentioned Duclair, and have a thought on Matt Dumba as well. Were you surprised at what Julian Brisebois did at deadline? Do you think that, did you think that there was going to be more? Did you think there was going to be less? Did you think that he might just, I don't know, about throw in the towel? I don't think he can, but yeah. That maybe, you know, scale things down or maybe just keep powder dry and say, hey, this isn't going to be our year. Where did you make a Tampa at the deadline?
Well, first, I remember Julian saying, I think last year at the deadline, that he owes the core of this team everything in his power to be able to help them try and win more championships. So I'm not surprised that he did something. Obviously, we know they were pretty far down the road in terms of Noah Hanifin, and that didn't work, so they had to pivot in the other direction. So I'm not surprised. The holes that he filled are what he filled. You had the cap space because of the injury to Mikhail Sergachev and the LTI that you can use because of that. So I knew he was probably going to try and find a way to use that cap space because Sergachev is a big part of this team. He eats a lot of heavy minutes on this team, and he's missed a good portion of the year, and obviously he's going to be out the rest of the year. So they needed some help on defense. We all thought it was going to be lefty, and that's why they were so far down with Hanifin. It ends up being a righty. They didn't pay much at all to get Matt Dumba, a fifth-round pick in 2027. I mean, that's hardly anything to pay for a player of his quality. I know he hasn't been the same type of player the last couple of years, but he's fit in on the right side, and it's forced Nick Perbix, normally a righty, to play lefty. We don't see that too often. But his physical presence, his ability to read the play, his first pass, underrated part of his game. Again, another player who's fit in pretty seamlessly here in just two games. I wasn't surprised by what Julian did to fill the holes that they needed to fill, some depth forward and bring in some help on defense.
You know, one of the things that we all sort of did around deadline when it became obvious that Tampa was the place where Noah Hanifin wanted to end up, I think we all played fantasy general manager. How could Tampa, you know, given a lot of the, well, lack of resources, cap space, et cetera, given all the handcuffs that were on Julian Brisebois to make this deal in the first place, I think we all tried to craft together, okay, what could a deal look like? You're there. You know the organization. You know what is available. How, if they were going to make the Hanifin deal, what would it have looked like to you, Eric?
Well, I think we all thought a first-round draft pick was going to be involved. Lightning don't have one of those for 3 years, right? There's none in 24, there's none in 25, yes. The next one's in 26. So three drafts away from being able to put that into play. They don't have, and this is the price of success, they don't have a ton of top prospects. They don't have guys that are going to, you know, rank high on a lot of prospect lists. They do have Isaac Howard, who's playing at Michigan State. He was a star for Team USA at the World Juniors here, including a couple of goals in the gold medal game. They do have that. I don't think Julian wanted to part ways from him, with him. So maybe it could have been, you know, Dylan Duke is playing at the University of Michigan. They're pretty high on his play. Gage Gonsalves, who's come up and played a couple of games at the NHL level this year, a second-round pick just a couple of years ago. So they don't have high-end prospects, but they have prospects that are going to play. I mean, you saw one of them move to San Jose in the Jack Thompson and the Anthony Duclair deal, right-hand shot defenseman. Yep. So they don't have a ton. It probably would have included one, and it might have probably included two, a player off the roster. You know, whether you're talking a Nick Perbix, a younger defenseman who's 26 years old in his second full year in the NHL. It probably would have looked something like that. But I tell you, when I saw what Vegas gave up to get him, I can't believe Tampa Bay couldn't match that.
Now, do you think that there is, and again, like, who knows about what Vegas's future plans are going to be here with Noah Hanifin? I think the strong speculation is that he's there and they're going to work on him as best they can to try to get him to sign, and a Stanley Cup makes that a little bit of a smoother discussion. But is this something that you think that Julian Brisebois leaves or picks up again in the offseason, knowing that there's, you know, clearly interest from the other side?
I think it gets revisited, right? If the reports were accurate that there was the framework of an extension already sort of out there, that kind of tells you how far down the road they were. So yeah, if Noah Hanifin does not re-sign and stay in Vegas and he hits the open market, there's no doubt that I think they revisit it. There's a lot going on with the Lightning, certainly this offseason, the Steven Stamkos contract, first and foremost, at the top of everybody's mind, whether they're going to be able to bring him back. They have cap issues next year. Brandon Hagel's contract extension kicks in. He goes from 1.5 to 6.5. So there's a lot going on. And now you brought in a Duclair, who looks like a great fit Can you try and find a way to re-sign him? Matt Dumba, they flirted with Matt Dumba for years in talking about trying to bring him here. They finally get him. Do you find a way to keep him?
Nah.
So there's a lot that Tampa Bay has to deal with and Julian has to deal with this summer in terms of contracts and extensions and everything. But I think if the opportunity is there to revisit, potentially talking to Noah Hanifin, I think it happens. I'm not saying he's necessarily going to come here, but that conversation will be had.
Right. So here's one, and we'll end on this one, Eric, up against the clock. Let me ask you about the offseason and the contingencies. So this is a Tampa Bay Lightning team that is, listen, they got Stanley Cups in their hip pockets. No one's going to feel bad for the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's been a miraculous, it's been a marvelous run here for Tampa, one of maybe the best, you know, team in the NHL this generation. So no one's going to shed a tear for Tampa, but they're in a tough spot here. And this is the Tampa Bay Lightning team that's coming off a first-round exit last year at the hands of the Toronto Maple Leafs. If it's another first round exit, what happens to this team? What happens to this organization? Is it run it right back? It's still a good team, and maybe it's just a run of bad luck for a couple of seasons, or is it an indication of a bigger problem that Julien Brisebois needs to do something about? I know we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but if it's back to back first round exits, what do you think happens?
I think they run it back. You have the cornerstone of all the success they've had is Andrei Vasilevskiy. He's coming off a back surgery, missed the first 5-6 weeks of the year. He's had bouts of inconsistency. He looked great going into the All-Star break, has been inconsistent coming out of the break. So with him as your cornerstone for everything you do, is if he's healthy, you run it back. You've got Nikita Kucherov playing the way he is. You've got Braden Point is going to, you know, probably hit the 40-goal mark again this year after hitting 50 next year. Yeah. Hagel's going to hit 30 goals again. You have a lot of good young talent here. They don't have the depth they did. They certainly don't have the depth on defense. I mean, they've been trying to find ways to fill Ryan McDonough's hole for two seasons now, and it's not easy to do because of the type of player that Ryan McDonough is. But I think with this team, with this core and Julian's approach, I think they run it back. And give it another couple kicks at the can. But the first domino is going to be Steven Stamkos.
Right. You know, I'll close on this one. I just mentioned this with Jason Demers before you came on, too. It seemed as if, and I for the longest time, I always thought the final straw was going to be Andre Palat. Like, that was the player they couldn't afford to let go of, or everything would crumble. Like, so obviously, like, they're not going to get rid of Vasilevskiy and Kucherov, Stamkos, etc. But turns out that it was Ryan McDonough the whole time. Like, how many times have you seen a team do this? Like, let go, and specifically a defenseman like Ryan McDonough, and they have the hardest time trying to replace him. Did you realize that at that time when Tampa had to make that decision, that was going to be that one piece too much, that you were going to start to see Tampa take a step back because they couldn't keep him in the mix? Were you surprised that it was him specifically?
No, because he was that important to this team. I mean, you know the type of player he is. He's just so professional in his approach for everything. And when you can have a Victor Hedman or a Ryan McDonough on the ice for basically the entire game, you know, throw in Sergachev here and there, because this is ultimately what the absence of McDonough did. He was such a good partner for Eric Chernak, and Eric Chernak was a beast when he played with Ryan McDonough. And then late in games, you had Mikhail Sergachev, who they threw on the right side with Victor Hedman when it was time to close out games. That's a pretty good four closers, right? Hedman, Sergachev, McDonough, Chernak. With no McDonough there, all of a sudden Sergachev has to elevate his role, and they paid him like he was going to do that. And now all of a sudden he has to take those minutes. Now you don't have that guy on the third pairing that you can move up to play on the right side to try and close games out. So that's the big absence with him, with McDonough, is those type of minutes that they just didn't have anybody to take those on and then fill Sergachev's role beneath that. So it was a domino effect once he pulled out, because it puts guys in different roles that maybe they're not as good at when the minutes are higher.
Really thorough. Lightninginsider.com is the website. My guest has been the great Eric Erlandson. Great to catch up again, pal. You be well. Enjoy the weekend and enjoy more Tampa Bay Lightning action. What an impressive, at least half game that was yesterday from Tampa. Thanks as always, pal. We'll catch up soon.
My pleasure, and I can say this, it's good to see you.
Good to see you too, my friend. It's the great Eric Erlandson. Good to see you. And that's it for the program today. That's it for the week. Listen, Hockey Night in Canada, always full value. Check that out tomorrow. Also, I want to thank everyone who popped by the program today. Eric Erlandson, who you just heard from. Also, Jason Demers, Jimmy Murphy, and Mike Rupp. Thanks to our producer, David Siss, on the board, Austin Mackey, and our great TV director, Jen Rolnick. Have a great weekend. Merrick Show returns on Monday. Another podcast from me and Elliot coming up Monday morning as well. We'll talk to you again soon. It's getting spicy in the East, hey? Like, all of a sudden, we got races. I know we kicked off the show talking about Buffalo and Washington and what's happening with Detroit, and can New Jersey do this? Technically, they're still right there. I think we're all wondering about the Philadelphia Flyers as well. They lose to the Toronto Maple Leafs yesterday. But Torts is back. Do things change there now? But their spot isn't exactly solid either, so by the time Monday rolls around, all the conversations will be different. But we'll have them here on The Merrick Show on Monday. Thanks for joining me. Have a great weekend.